Hello, and welcome to Nerdverse Unshuffled, a podcast where we discuss the language people use when they talk about board games. We are your hosts, Jacques van Heerden and Fayard Hendricks.
Have you ever tried to learn a new game and you wondered what on earth do they mean by rounds, turns, actions? If you've ever felt confused about whether these means different things or they're just different words for the same thing, well, this is the episode for you. In this episode, we are discussing timekeeping in board games. The term is used to explain when different things happen in board games and when to track what players do over the course of the game.
Yeah, so the first thing to note about the concept of time in board games is that it actually covers several related terms. So each of these terms actually deserves to be discussed at some length, and we're going to try to do that as much as possible in this episode. But we're also trying to balance out just having a reasonable amount of time and keeping the episodes to a place where you can actually listen to it in one big section. So we will mention a few examples and a few exceptions throughout the course of this, but we are going to basically have to split this into two episodes because there's just too much to cover. I mean, we've significantly expanded this entry since the original publication, and I mean, it's like the more you look into this, the more complexity you can kind of find in how games use these terms.
Oh, yeah.
There is no there's no sort of academy of board game terminology that insists on everybody using the same words.
But with that, let's get into the definitions.
So the first time-related term we're going to be looking at is rounds. So as always, we're going to just read from the book, and then we'll discuss in a bit of depth. So take it away, Fayard.
Okay, so there are three main variations of what board game designers consider a single round. Now, the first one is it's a full iteration of the game where every player has had a single turn until gameplay has cycled through every player at least once. So note that that at least is important. And the simplest and most common round is from the starting player, and it goes clockwise on the table. And, you know, once every player has had a single turn to go, that's one round. Some game mechanics can reverse this mid-game or dictate that the player order follows some sort of turn order track on the game board. But it does vary from game to game. The second variation is it's a complete run through a set of phases. And each phase, each player could have multiple turns. And the third one is one full depletion of a set of, you know, something. Could be cards, workers, points, whatever it is, or any similar mechanic that indicates that, you know, your components need to be replenished. And you find that this is common in games where the previous definition of rounds, where we spoke earlier, doesn't make enough sense, or where those definitions are too tiny, too discrete a unit for the game that we're talking about. That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. I mean, so that's a lot of definitions for a single term. We've only just started.
Yeah.
So I wasn't kidding when I said at the beginning that this is a complex. It's not even just even one term. It's like a complex of terms, you know. And like you will have seen a lot of terms being used in those definitions that we'll have to go into more detail later on in this episode. So we'll get to what a turn is in part one, and then I think we'll get to phases in part two.
Yeah, I think
But in the course of your definition so far, you mentioned this idea of a start player. Now, the term seems pretty self-explanatory, but can we just discuss that quickly?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of games ask you to remember or identify who the player was who started the game, who took the first turn of the game. And usually for the sake of fairness, a lot of games specify that when we reach the point at which the game is ending or has ended, every other player needs to finish the round, and sometimes, you know, all the players, including the start player, has an additional round. It depends on the game. And other games, they don't care who the start player is. You know, as soon as the game is identified as having ended, the game ends. That's it. there's nothing more to or say.
Yeah, I mean, some games do end quite abruptly. I think
Scythe, for example. Yeah,
Scythe, for example. And then we also played, didn't we play a game this weekend where it also sort of just abruptly, like, okay, so the one person does this and then the game ends. Oh, it was Imperial Settlers, Empires of the North, where yes. Once somebody gets the 25 yeah. points, that's it. That's the end of the game.
That's it.
Nothing else happens.
Exactly.
You're done.
Yeah.
You know, put a stick of fork in it. So I mean, that's quite fun. Although it can be quite surprising if you're not paying attention to what everybody else is doing.
Exactly.
Which is why.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to be very careful with games like that. I think also Scythe, I lost quite decisively the first time I played it, specifically because I wasn't keeping track of, like, wait. So when is this game ending? You know, oh, wait, oh, no, my yeah. I haven't managed to do anything I
now,
planned to do.
Now.
But the game's done.
What?
You missed your chance, buddy.
We're probably going to cut this bit from the episode, but with Scythe, what I found is that if someone has landed their third star for getting towards victory, the game is, you know, two or three rounds from over. So it's like, you better be sure that you got your ducks in
yeah,
the
no,
at that point.
That, yeah, no, anyway. That's exactly actually what happened. But yeah, let's not get into too much detail for particular games. But okay, so just back to the idea of a round. What do you mean? What exactly do you mean when you say one full depletion of components? Why is that a good way of telling when a round has ended?
I think the best way to illustrate that is by example. And one of the best examples I've got is with the game Seven Wonders, right, which takes place over three ages of humanity in terms of, you know, inventing and building things. But each age is a small deck of cards, right? And because there's no concept of start player, all players are playing simultaneously. Okay. The idea of a round doesn't make sense.
Right.
Until you say, okay, you know, when all the cards are finished for one age, that's when you know that round is finished because everyone's playing simultaneously.
Okay. Okay.
So the way that Seven Wonders works is that because you look at your hand of cards and you take one out and you pass that entire hand along to the next player.
Hmm.
So that's what we mean by one full depletion, because then they say, okay, by the end of that, once all the cards are out the hands, the round is over.
Okay. So, I mean, I suppose that does actually make sense in terms of tracking the progress of a game. So it's either, you know, this, we've got this many players around the table, and each of these players has had this many rounds. I mean, they've all participated in a certain number of rounds, and now the game is finished. Versus, okay, so
yeah,
here's
exactly.
a pile of components, and we're going to track, you know, the progress of the game by just going like, okay, so once these are done, that's the equivalent
yeah.
of having gone around the table a certain number of times.
Yeah, several times, exactly.
So, I mean, it does kind of make sense in terms of why it's called a round.
Yeah.
Okay. And I suppose the other question to ask is, do all games have rounds?
No.
Okay.
They don't. I think the only commonality between all games is that at least all players will hopefully at some point get a turn. But everything else is up in the air. You know, even, you know, when you come down to turns, you may not even get actions. It could be your turn. You can't do anything. But yeah, no. So short answer, no. All games do not have rounds. I'll give an example of Sushi Go, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you can play the game, and everyone's taking turns. So it's like Seven Wonders in that everyone is you know, receiving a hand of cards from the previous player, and then passing on that, taking one out, passing that hand of cards to the next player.
Okay.
But everyone's playing simultaneously. There's no concept of a round.
Mm. Okay. Right. Yeah.
So I think you'll find, especially in games where play is happening simultaneously, the concept of a round doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
The game Alien Frontiers also doesn't have the concept of a round, just because everyone is, once the game starts, it just goes around and around and around and around. There's no need to identify who the start player was, how many rounds you played. and so on. It's like, yeah, everyone just takes their turn around the table until the game is over.
And then obviously, you know, just talking about start player, the start player can change between rounds as well. And then that's also sort of like an added little bit of complexity. But that does bring us nicely to the question, or to the term turns. So how do we define a turn?
Okay. So a turn, which is, you'll sometimes see being called an action turn, it's generally taken to mean the set of actions of a single player. And now we're going to get into more, you know, variation on the on things. It may change depending on the phase that you're in. But there are two main types of turns, right? So you've got sequential turns, where every player takes one turn, one after the other, and it goes round table. So you can have simultaneous turns, where players all act at the same time. So like we mentioned earlier, Sushigo or Seven Wonders, those are simultaneous. Yeah. Most games we know of are sequential.
Yeah, because it's easier to keep track, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, like we said at the beginning, we are going to be looking at some exceptions and games and either things that the game does or that you can do separately to mess with us a little bit. But
yeah,
that also, I think, I mean, the question of sequential versus simultaneous.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting aspect to keep track of or to take note of when you're looking at a game, right? Because, I mean, those can be very different experiences. Like the one is sort of, it feels a lot more organized, maybe, and slightly less chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, simultaneous turns at either a game where it's like full chaos and just things are happening, or your actions affect others so little that it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you know, Sushigo, where all you're doing is receiving a set of cards and so on. You pick one out and you pass what's left to the next player.
So actually on that subject, let me ask you this question quickly and we can decide, you know, what we think of this. But if you look at a game like Pit, you're doing that sort of simultaneous sort of cross bidding, and everyone's bidding at the same time, and there's lots of shouting, and it's like three and like two and four, two, three, one, and like, you know, there's this sort of loud, boisterous sort of simultaneous conversation going on. Would that count as a turn? Yeah. Or I can't remember what they use for what phrase they use.
This is a game that doesn't have turns, but it got rounds.
Okay, so that's an example of a game with rounds, not turns. Okay,
a fantastic example.
Yeah, and it's a lovely game. It is very much like chaos. If chaos is your thing, you should check out Pit. It's a very old game. It's from 1903, but it's beautiful. It's so much fun. I think. Yeah,
and I mean, it's for a game that old, it is still solid.
Yeah, and I mean, the definitely, if you can embrace the sort of chaos of all that simultaneous action going on at the same time, then you're going to be having a good time. So then, I think the next one is actions, and that's the simplest one that we're looking at, like the most sort of basic one thus far.
Yes, that is the simplest, most basic thing. So it's literally one thing a player can do, right? And in a lot of games, your action could be your entire turn. It's literally just what you do. So you look at, for example, Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of things you can do on your turn, but you only take one of them.
Right.
Right. Your actions are literally take cards, play trains. Okay. In other games, what you've got, it's not just the one action. It's you can do a whole bunch of them, up to either a number of them, up to a certain allocation, up to, you know, it varies from game to game.
Yeah.
But you take a look at a game like Clank or Clank in Space, right? your actions are limited by what cards you've got in your hand. Mm. So you could do up to 5, 6, 12 actions, depending on how on what you've managed to do with your cards. Because some cards will pull more cards into your hand, giving you more actions to do. So that is a game where one action isn't going to end your turn. But in a lot of simpler games, yeah, one action will end your turn.
And then I think another good example we can maybe just talk through in this sense is another game we played yesterday, which is Fantastica. So yeah. In that case, there are some actions you can take where you've just got the one action. And yes, then you've also got a bunch of free actions you can do pretty much at any time. And then if there's a specific action you can take that consists of several parts, and then there's another one where where your turn basically consists of you taking one action, quote unquote, but that action actually consists of doing the same thing a number of times. You're actually like repeating it.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, this can get very complicated and very confusing very quickly. But let's just recap very, very quickly. So
yeah,
just in terms of turns, actions, and rounds, what's the hierarchy there? Like how do those three things fit
together? Okay, so you have one action or many actions inside a turn, right? And then many turns, one per player usually, inside a round. And then X amount of rounds inside the entire game.
Okay. Right. Okay. So, I mean, that's just as a way for people to kind of keep track or keep score at this point of like where we are and what and how any of this stuff fits together. I think that for me kind of I find that a very useful kind of framework to keep in mind. It's like how they all fit together. Which thing comes first?
Although I wanted to say to you, probably a good place to point out what you spoke about earlier, free actions.
Okay.
All right. And a lot of games have got all sorts of different names depending on the game.
Yeah.
Because we recently played Great Western Trail.
Also yesterday.
Right. And also yesterday. And there is that concept of those free actions kind of. And that if you can't do anything else, there are those double actions you can do on the side of your board. But you look at a game like Fantastica, it calls them free actions. It's like literally actions that you can take at any time in your turn.
Right.
Right. So they don't count towards your specified number of actions for the round. So it doesn't count towards your, in some games, the single action that you've got per round. You look at Lacerda Games, he calls them executive actions.
Right.
Right. And they aren't necessarily free, but they come as a consequence of one or two other. And some games are free. It really just depends on the game. It gets complicated. But we'll get back to the Lacerda thing when we talk, maybe in the second episode, when we talk about reactions.
Yes.
That's when I want to talk about executive actions, because that is a lot of where executive actions come from. But like in On Mars, you can do executive actions. You have to pay for it to do extra actions, but they don't count towards your standard actions of that round. It gets complicated.
I mean, it does take experience to kind of keep track of all these things. But also, I think even experienced gamers get confused when they're using these terms, and I think very few people could actually give you a proper definition of what any of this stuff means.
Yeah.
So I think it's
because the definitions change so much.
But I think it's, in my experience, it's been helpful to know that look, there are all these different terms, and they all do actually mean different things. And you know, I think I would like to talk about one of my favorite examples of complex way of managing actions and turns, which is Arkham Horror, second edition.
Yes.
So like that game is famous for confusing people when they're playing it because they can't keep track of the different terms, some of which we haven't discussed yet. So I'm not going to get into too much detail at this point, but we will get back to that, I think.
I mean, if it's any consolation to anyone who's confused by Arkham Horror, the fact that there are so many flowcharts available on BoardGameGeek website is a testament to how complicated it is and probably shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, it should be relatively simple. Well, again, it should be relatively simple depending on the game. And I think some games make it easier for you to keep track of what exactly happens at different points and kind of just streamlining that. But talking about flowcharts, I mean, we had to add a flowchart in the book to explain how all these things fit together. So, you know, flowcharts are your friend. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I mean, let's just look at actions in a little bit of detail. So, I mean, it does seem like it's a fundamental kind of part of what defines a game, right?
Yeah, it is. It literally is the core of any game. It's literally what drives the game from turn to turn.
Yeah.
It is like the atom of the game in that every action implies a decision and a deliberate choice to do that action, right? Which is why everyone hates Snakes and Ladders as a game lacking any decent decision-making. You could put the game on autopilot, take the players away, and because there's no decision-making, the game plays itself and the outcome's almost exactly the same.
It's also a little bit unfair to Snakes and Ladders because obviously we've discussed this separately.
It was made as a life lesson.
It's not really a game. It's trying to teach you something but it's trying to express a philosophy. But that doesn't make it a great board game. It makes it a very bad board game.
But it does bring you why Ludo, for example, or Parcheesi in some places in the world, is a superior game to Snakes and Ladders, right? It's because you have some, even though you're going with the dice, there is a decision to make. Which of these four pieces are you moving around the board? It makes a difference.
So, I mean, even in a very simple game, Zombie Dice.
Yeah.
So, even in that game, I mean, your action is basically you roll the die. You roll the dice.
Yeah.
And then you decide, am I going to keep rolling?
And that's your decision, right? That's your action.
That's where the decision lies. There's no more complex thing that happens.
No, absolutely. It doesn't need to be, right? But that just that making a choice is exactly what makes... I mean, let's look at an even simpler game than that, right? And that's... You can barely call it a game. Is Rory Story Cubes.
Oh, right.
And it's dice with pictures on them, right? And you roll these dice and you have to make a story out of what's going on in the pictures. It's still that decision, which order do I put the pictures, which, you know, how do I construct the story? It's in pure imagination, but it is still a decision you have to make. It's still a discrete thing that you're doing.
So in that case, because I haven't actually played Rory's Story Cubes the way that you're supposed to. I've just used them as props in other games. but in terms of Rory's Story Cubes, so do they have turns and rounds?
No. You can if you want. But there's no scorekeeping. There's no... When I say it barely counts as a game, I mean that quite literally, because a game is defined by the boundaries of it starts and ends. There is a definite start, there's a definite end to it. You know, even if that end is, you know, however nebulous, the fact that we have a condition for what we can call the end of the game makes it a game, which is why, as much as I hate to say it, Snakes and Ladders still does count as a game in this regard, because it is an end. As soon as someone reaches the 100 space, they've won, right? Rory Story Cubes, there's no end. You just decide, we're done telling stories for today and leave it.
Fair enough. Speaking of ending things and leaving things, that is actually where we're going to leave this episode. We are going to get back to the other parts of this definition. So we're going to be looking at phases. We're also going to be looking at reactions, and we're going to be looking at some more exceptions and some more peculiarities of how different board games have used these terms. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on various platforms and join the conversation on Discord. Links in the episode description wherever you found this podcast. You can find articles and discussions about the terms used in this podcast over at nerdverse.co.za. You can also find articles on a host of other subjects, including tabletop role-playing games, interviews, events, and how-tos. Your hosts were Jacques van Heerden and Fjord Hendricks. Music editing and producer, Fjord Hendricks. Executive producer, Jacques van Heerden. Unshuffled is a Nerdverse Productions podcast.